Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Ki Tse'etse 5771, which begins in the Stone Chumash on page 1046, 1046. And today I would like to ask you a question. And remember, we're winding down our year of Basics of Torah Reality. So I want to ask you the following question. Why are we learning Torah? That's a pretty funny question coming from a Kollel rabbi, because that seems to be what we do all the time. So I want to explore that question. Why are we learning Torah? Okay, we'll come back to that question. Now I want to tell you a Dvar Torah from Ki Tse'etse. And the reason I'm going to tell you the Dvar Torah that I'm about to tell you is because I learned it from Rabbi Weinberg, of blessed memory. And if you were here last week, you heard me say that I'm going to try every week from now till the end of the cycle to find some Dvar Torah from Rav Weinberg. So here is a Dvar Torah. It's from the Aish.com website, which was compiled by Rabbi Baruch Lev, a student of Rabbi Weinberg. I was also a student of Rabbi Weinberg, but I didn't take the initiative to do what Rabbi Baruch Lev did, which was to write Dvar Torahs every week for several years from what he learned from Rav Weinberg. So this is called Children and Sacrifices. The Dvar Torah pertains to this week's Parsha on page 1050, chapter 22, verse 6 through 7. And it is concerning the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, sending the mother bird from the nest. The Torah reads, if a bird's nest happens to be before you on the road, on any tree or on the ground, young birds or eggs, and the mother is roosting on the young birds or the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall surely send away the mother and take the young for yourself, so that it will be good for you and you will prolong your days. A very peculiar mitzvah, I must say. You're walking on the road and you see a nest, and in the nest is something that you want. You want some eggs or some chicks. And the mother is roosting, and the Torah instructs us a negative commandment and a positive commandment. The negative commandment is you may not take the whole nest with the mother and the young. Positive commandment, you should send away the mother bird and then take the young. It's peculiar, first of all, because it's peculiar, and second of all, the Torah promises an unbelievable reward so that it will be good for you and you will prolong your days. Yes, Dina?
You see something that you want.
Uh-huh. What if you don't want it?
Yeah.
That's a major scholarly debate, whether you only pursue this mitzvah if you really want the eggs or the chicks, or you should pursue it for the sake of pursuing this mitzvah because this is the way it's stated. I don't know the answer. There are people, I'll just tell you that there are people that will go out of their way to do this mitzvah, even though they're never going to buy eggs outside of the supermarket. So there is a value to doing this mitzvah for its own sake. Wendy?
I'm not getting it, but I think it's really interesting how you look at the mother roosting.
Yeah. What's so special about that?
Because the rooster is the male.
Oh. I'm just reading. Mm-hmm. Mother is roosting. That's an art scroll question.
Hovering over.
It's not gender specific.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There
one's
you go.
A noun, one's a verb.
There you go. Okay. Back to the Dvar Torah. The title of this Dvar Torah, coined by the editor, Rabbi Baruch Lev, the author, is Children and Sacrifices. And I read, "No, we will not be discussing child sacrifice, but rather the sacrifices parents make for their children. If we had to link two commandments in the Torah," for those of you who just came in, this is a, Rabbi Baruch Leff is a student of Rabbi Weinberg, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, our teacher from Ne'er Israel, in very great measure a founding father of the Orthodox community of Atlanta. Not in the formal sense, but very much in the spiritual sense. And so this is taken from Rabbi Weinberg's teachings, but it was penned and transcribed by Rabbi Leff. If we had to link two commandments in the Torah, there are many that would come to mind easily. What about the commandments of honoring one's parents and of sending away the mother bird before you take her young? Not exactly on the top of your list, is it? Yet there is a strong connection between the directive of Shiluach HaKein, sending away the mother bird before you take her young, which is discussed in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh, and Kibud Avoim, honoring one's parents. He reads the verse, and he reads the reward. The reward for this mitzvah is length of days. As we may be aware, there is only one other place where the Torah uses the expression, you will have length of days, as a reward. And that is concerning the mitzvah of honoring one's parents. So those are the only two mitzvahs in the whole Torah that have the same reward. And what a reward it is. There must be some kind of common denominator between these two commandments, which otherwise appear totally dissimilar and unrelated. That common denominator is self-sacrifice. The Torah recognizes and grants great reward for commandments which involve our recognition of Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. When the Torah instructs us to honor our parents, it is telling us that parents exhibit tremendous Mesiras Nefesh for their children, self-sacrifice, beginning with being woken up at all hours of the night, during infancy and childhood, to the financial stresses, such as paying for the wedding. Parenting, by definition, is about sacrificing your own comforts for your children. The Torah prescribed the great reward of length of days for honoring one's parents in order to cause people to appreciate the self-sacrifice that their parents exhibited. It's almost as if God is saying, if there's one thing I want you to walk away with in life, is to appreciate all that your parents did for you. And to that end, I am offering the highest paid reward of any mitzvah. Well, this is exactly the same concept we find concerning the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird before you take her young. Now listen carefully to this explanation. Anyone who has ever tried to catch a bird knows that it is a virtually impossible task. So, when does a person ever encounter a situation where he can catch a bird? Won't the bird fly away? The answer is that it is when that bird is a mother. Like all mothers, she is willing to sacrifice and give over her own freedom in order to remain with her children. For one to grab the bird and take advantage of the self-sacrifice present in the maternal instinct of that mother to her offspring is prohibited. By granting the mother her freedom and sending her away, we avoid utilizing her attribute of self-sacrifice against her. By not taking advantage of her Mesiras Nefesh, we show our appreciation for the concept of self-sacrifice for children. Therefore, here as well, as a reward for that recognition and appreciation of parents' love and concern towards offspring, one is entitled to length of days.
This may seem like a silly question, but how do you shoo the mother bird away if she's self-sacrificing?
She's going to still come back, right. You have to wait until she leaves. And the Talmud says that if you shoo her away and she comes back, you got to shoo her away again. She comes even 4 or 5 times, even 100 times, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah until you're sure she's gone. There's an entire chapter in the Talmud devoted to this mitzvah.
So the mother can't be watching from a distance, like 100 feet away.
I don't know the answer exactly. How far away is sent? that's a question for the Talmud. I mentioned to somebody that there's a man in our community, Rabbi Shlomo Berkowitz, a former teacher at Torah Day School, also a student of Near Israel, like I am, and now he has a made himself another career in anesthetist. Anyway, he has a father who lives in Manhattan somewhere, and this man, very pious, observant Jew, took upon himself to find a mitzvah that most people have a hard time doing and becoming an expert in it and availing others of the opportunity to perform that mitzvah. I don't know if there's more than one, but this is the one. This is one of the mitzvahs. He has become an expert in this, and in the cement jungle of New York, he actually has off of his porch nests of birds, the right kind of bird and the right kind of nests. He's well known that anybody that wants to fulfill this mitzvah goes and visits that address in New York and can do this mitzvah. So he would know the answer.
You read in the beginning, if you happen to come upon.
That's right. That's why it's not allowed to be in your property. So he has to have it, he has to construct it in such a way that it's actually off of his property. It's like hanging over the porch. Such technicalities must be observed in order to do the mitzvah properly. Anyway, let's get back to our question here. We just learned at Bar Torah. And the source was, at least the more immediate source, was our teacher, our Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Weinberg. What did we learn from this Devar Torah? What did we learn from this Devar Torah? Besides the obvious. You know me, I like to get to the bottom of things, or to the top of things. We're learning...
Indirectly, we're honoring the ultimate creator, the creator of all life.
I'm going back further. Well, I don't know about further. I'm going somewhere with this. As I said, we are winding down our unit, our year-long study of basics of Torah reality. Let me just preface this by saying, this Devar Torah is wow in my book. You can ask 100 people for the explanation of this Devar Torah, and you'll be lucky if one of them will give this explanation. Unless, of course, he's read this article. But to me, it's wow. And that's what I'm getting at. I want to start off my waxing here on page 27 of the book Pathways from Rav Volba, and I've read to you from this book numerous times before. It is Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe, is one of the foremost teachers of Mussar and Jewish character development in the world of recent times. And he wrote... Besides his extensive work, advanced work in yeshivos, he wrote a wonderful little book called Pathways, a Brief Introduction to the World of Torah. And Torah is indeed a world. He speaks about God being the creator of the world. And he asks the question, would the creator who conceived and created all of this, all of the world and all of its, he really mentions a lot of problems and a lot of issues that are very difficult to deal with in life and in societies, in relationships, would he not give any instructions on how to live, how to utilize the material existence that he created, how to relate to objects, situations, events? Is there no user's manual? Indeed, he did. He gave us the Torah. It is our manual on how to relate to every detail of this world. It sets everything in its place and proper time, in its exact measure, with nothing superfluous. Why only to us? Our sages teach that the Torah was offered freely and equally to every nation and people on earth. Only we were prepared to accept it. True, our Creator is concerned about all of His creatures. He gave 7 commandments to the world at large, an indispensable minimum for everyone. There are 6 prohibitions against idolatry, murder, adultery, theft, eating a limb from a live animal, and blasphemy, and 1 obligation to establish courts of justice. The Jewish nation received the entire Torah, 613 commandments. Couldn't you have chosen someone else? The climax of the creation, its underlying purpose was the revelation at Mount Sinai, the giving of the Torah. Creation and revelation, nature and Torah, are one. Or in the words of our sages, the Torah is exalted, for were it not for the Torah, the heavens and the earth would not exist. The Torah's instrument in solving life problems is halacha. Halacha is a body of laws. But the essence of halacha is the way the laws are formulated. The process is rooted in logic, deep ethics, and unconditional truth-seeking. It is an experience to study Talmud for an hour. The novice discovers what the Ramban stated, to study Torah is to realize its divinity. The Gemara, another name for Talmud, deals with the simplest questions of everyday life. It is unbelievable to see how one word of the written Torah, hardly noticed in the reading, illuminates the Gemara and determines practical conclusions. Also striking is the methodology of Talmud study, which can compete in its exactness with any science. Mastering this process is called learning. What's he doing? He's learning. But it is not only a matter of concepts. One is constantly amazed by the understanding of the universe and human nature revealed in the Talmud. If Jews are one of the wisest people, then our Talmudic sages represent the epitome of wisdom. But in the Torah, there's more than wisdom. It embraces all spheres of life. It displays profound depth. The unity of the Torah and Talmud is based on a continuous tradition. Everywhere the divine shines through. When we speak of the experience of Talmud study, we do not mean the intellectual satisfaction. Everyone who learns Torah knows that his thought becomes purer, his baser impulses get rarer, and his noble qualities are aroused. This is not religion. It is far removed from religious ceremony. It is a new kind of life. This is what the Ramban meant when he said, to study Torah is to gain awareness of its divinity. In the midst of the problems of everyday living, it is the penetration of God's justice and mercy into all spheres of life. This is Torah's Chaim, a Torah of life. What we just did, by learning this Devar Torah, and hopefully by expanding on this from the words of Rabbi Wolbe, is we got a taste of Torah. The Torah of life. The Torah of life is something which comes to us through a long-standing tradition. A tradition of teaching, a tradition of wisdom that originated back on Mount Sinai when God revealed himself, God the Creator, revealed himself to man, to Jewish man, with teaching his Torah through Moshe, Moshe then passing it on to his disciples, who then pass it on to their disciples, and it goes down through the generations until today. Today we have still a group of Ba'alei Masorah, of people who have dedicated their lives to studying and receiving the Torah and its way of thinking from their predecessors. Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg was our Baal Masorah. He is our source to that unbroken tradition. Rabbi Weinberg was the classical Rebbe, the classical Talmud Chacham, the Torah scholar, who represented not just Torah wisdom, but Torah life. For the rest of the article, Rabbi Leff goes and tells anecdotes about Rav Weinberg, how he was just like that mother bird for his students and for any Jew. If I could just read a few anecdotes. One's students are described in the Torah as one's children. Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg of blessed memory treated his students as his children and exhibited tremendous self-sacrifice for them. Although he was a spiritual guide for thousands, constantly being called regarding life and death issues, and issues involving the well-being of the Jewish nation as a whole, he was able to live the maxim that a Jew must always be concerned for Klal Yisrael, the entirety of Israel, and Reb Yisrael, the individual Jew. A Jew must care deeply about the great issues and problems facing the Jewish nation, but he can't do so at the expense of ignoring the smaller issues of his next-door neighbor. Whether the issue was of grand national scale or one where his students needed assistance with things of lesser significance, Rav Yaakov was always self-sacrificing. Let us cite a few examples from Rav Yaakov's life. For a number of years, Rav Yaakov traveled every week to a small community in East Lexington, near Baltimore. A small band of young couples had invited him to expound on Judaism, secular and isolated though they were. The group eventually built a synagogue. Due to a lack of funds, they built it themselves. One of the members related that she remembered Rav Yaakov nailing shingles on the roof and stringing electric wire for the new sanctuary. She further related that many of that group later had become Sabbath observant and sent their children to day schools. But Rav Yaakov once went missing from the yeshiva for 2 days because a student expressed an intent to divorce his wife. For 2 days, Rav Yaakov counseled them in an effort to save the marriage. Another time, a young teacher phoned from out of town because he was lacking success in his new position. Convinced that he could not help him over the phone, Rav Yaakov flew at his own expense to observe the teacher in action, met with the principal and the teacher, and made suggestions. One more. During the week of the Shiva morning for Rav Yaakov, an old woman phoned the house, apparently unaware of Rav Yaakov's passing. She inquired as to why she did not receive the money for her medicine that week. The family immediately surmised that their father must have been personally sending the money. Not wishing to burden her yet with the tragedy, they explained that perhaps the address had been lost. "For 20 years you have been sending money to the same place and now you lost the address?" she replied incredulously. What makes Rav Yaakov Weinberg from New York such a great man? What makes his wisdom something that thousands wanted to learn from him and still learn from him? To put it another way, what makes him wiser than the next guy? This is one of the most difficult challenges, I'm surmising, for modern man. You see, somebody who, from a young age, is exposed to such great to a scholar of such great magnitude in a yeshiva, knows right away that there's a very big gap between someone like that and someone like himself, like I was. There is a tremendous honor and respect in the yeshiva for teachers, for rebbeim. We all recognize the difference. The truth is that there is also a great gap between someone who's steeped in Torah and ethics, and another person, a peer, let's say, in age, in a different field. Let's say somebody who was raised and developed in a secular career, very highly qualified, outstanding in their position. There's a big difference between the Talmud Chacham, between the Baal Mesorah, the link in that unbroken chain of Torah transmission, and the person who is trained and learned in secular wisdom, although they are both highly accomplished. What's the difference? This goes back to the question that I started with. Why are we learning Torah? The only reason we are learning Torah is because we recognize that there's something called Das Torah, Torah wisdom, not just esoteric wisdom, Torah way of thinking that Jewish people can actually have. This is a wisdom that is sourced not in humankind, it is sourced in God Himself. And it is carefully transmitted throughout all the generations. This is something that's available to all of us. It's called Das Torah, Torah wisdom. But you can only get it from people who are part of that chain. You can see those people, not only in their mind, but in their midos, in their character traits and in their principles, what they understand about the reality of God's world. If this is our goal when we study Torah, not just to learn a lot of stories or to be fascinated or inspired, but because we are trying to acquire Torah wisdom, then our Torah has the value that it was intended for. It is almost Rosh Hashanah. And on Rosh Hashanah, we are all going to stand before Hashem and Shul. And we are going to say, I want to be better. I want to improve. I want to come closer to you, God. I want to improve the way I keep Shabbos. I want to improve the way I speak about people, that I shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. I want to improve my character traits, being a little bit less haughty, not be so angry or impatient. Is it not equally as important for a person to say, I would like to acquire more Das Torah? I would like to think more like a Torah person. I would like to become a little bit more like that Talmud Chacham, like that person who devoted himself to being a chain. I'd like to acquire a little bit more Torah wisdom. But the only way we can do that is to humble ourselves, to accept that as bright as we may be, as bright as our teachers may be, as bright as our parents were, we're looking for a certain type of wisdom, a certain type of knowledge, a knowledge that wasn't taught to me in university, that was not imparted to me by my parents, as wonderful as the lessons they were that they did teach me. But I need to learn Torah. I need to learn Torah wisdom. I need to receive it from a transmitter of that Torah. I need to humble myself to receive a little bit of that Das Torah. It may be a challenge for me to accept it because I may think, why do I have to learn from that person? I'm older than him. I have better training than him. This is the challenge to modern man, is accepting Das Torah. And this is why I brought this Devar Torah today from Rav Weinberg. Because it's important to realize where the source of our wisdom, the source of our teaching, if we are to truly receive from the Torah that we're studying the proper lessons and guidance. So may this Rosh Hashanah, may we, in addition to the particular mitzvot, the particular items that we know that we want to improve on, may we make a commitment to that super factor, to that super source of all that comes out. If we don't develop the Torah knowledge, we are going to have a hard time overcoming our faults. We are going to have a hard time making those changes. Because as we've learned over the past several months, it really comes from the top down. It is our way of thinking that influences the way we feel and the way we act. And the source of that thinking process is the Das Torah, the Torahism that we're talking about. And in order to get that, we have to open ourselves up to receive it. So let that be part of our Rosh Hashanah. Let that be part of our coming closer to God. Again, opening ourselves up, humbling ourselves to ask Hashem to help us receive some Das Torah. It is not at all a criticism to say that somebody lacks Das Torah. Nobody has it when they're born. Nobody can possibly get it unless they open themselves up to receive it. If we receive it, we have the benefit of all of the power that the Torah is to offer us. If we don't open ourselves up for it, if we insist on seeing things the way I understand them, I'm not here to learn from anybody else. I just want to get the information the way I like it, at the time I like it, and nobody's going to tell me how to understand the Torah, and nobody's going to tell me what this means, what that means. I don't need a Rebbe. They are studying Torah, but they're not receiving, they're not absorbing this Torah's Chaim, this Torah of life, that is really what we're here for. I hope this is clear. We're getting to the end of our unit on basics of Torah reality. This is one of the most basic of basics. And I didn't even get to this point of realization until this time in the year. But it's a big one. And it is the key to everything else that comes before. May we all have success in a truly becoming receptacles for this Das Torah, and we'll see the tremendous growth and the tremendous enlightenment that we will have from our Torah study. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yashar Koach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.